Hello and welcome to this podcast series, What is Community Philanthropy? My name's Terry Gibson. Like me, you might have come to the idea of community philanthropy wondering what it was all about. What does it mean? How does it work? What are its unique benefits and value? In what ways can it strengthen communities? In what ways can it complement or maybe challenge other approaches to development? These are quite complicated questions, and the series is going to look at them from different perspectives. But in this episode, we're going to start with a very particular case study. The Dalit Community Foundation emerged from a process taking nearly 10 years. As one of the co-leaders, Renji Joseph, describes the twists and turns, the struggles that took place in the development and emergence of this foundation, I think you, like me, will start to understand, in practical terms, the building blocks of community philanthropy, community foundations, and why these ideas are so powerful. It took me a while to catch up with Renji, who had technical problems connecting, quite difficult in rural India. Eventually, we connected while he was in Patna one Sunday evening, and I started by asking him to describe the situation of the Dalit communities he worked with.
Dalit are the lowermost strata in the caste structure. So economically, socially, parameters, they stand at the lowest in socially also they are discriminated highly. Economically, they are highly resourceless, poor. They are mostly the manual laborers, cleaners, sweepers, then all kinds of whichever the meaner physical activities, meaner physical jobs that has been listed down in the Indian system of occupation. As a group, Dalit, the meaning of the word Dalit itself is the broken, means they are a broken community. In all the sense, means they are a broken community, means they cannot be called as one single community.
So here's a challenge in working with the Dalit community, which is, as Renji says, that the community itself is broken. The Dalit are separated into many separate groups. So how could these people start to work together and tackle some of the challenges they faced? One challenge was maternal health, where there was assistance available, but the assistance came after a birth, which wasn't much use in helping a mother who was preparing for childbirth. Renji explains.
A pregnant woman could get registered under the scheme, and for promoting this was mostly for promoting institutional delivery, because delivery used to be happening in the houses, so in unsecure situations. So the mothers were to be entitled for 1400 rupees. So this 1400 rupees would come when they have an institutional delivery done. So after the delivery, they will receive a check. There is a time when they need this money. That is during their pregnancy. So during their pregnancy, they needed the money. Maybe came during the pregnancy. They could have bought some nutritional food. They could have compensated for their medicinal needs or any supplement needs. They were losing their jobs, some food, or in a condition where people are hand to mouth, they are losing their job because of pregnancy. And this money could have helped them for their food and so many things.
As with many external initiatives, the idea was good, but there hadn't been much time taken to match it to the actual situation of the people. So giving the money to women after the child was born, which was certainly an incentive to go into hospital for a birth, left them exposed to the fact that they were out of jobs, they were needing nutrition, they were needing health care before the birth, and that's when they needed the money. Renji explained that the already existing self-help groups in the area started to work out a way to address this problem.
So the Dalit community group took up the responsibility of providing, means, so they had an agreement amongst the community members. Whoever is a pregnant lady in this village, once she is getting registered with the Janani Suraksha Yojana, she will also get registered with the Dalit community group. And as soon as she gets registered with the Dalit community group, so they had a little pool of resources that could be rotated among the community. So what they would do is, they divide this money into three or four parts. And the first tranche is given to her in the month she gets registered. Say it is in the second month or third month. In the sixth month, she again gets another tranche of that money. And by the time she has to be ready to move to the hospital or anything, she may have to keep contact with the vehicle or anything. She may have to pay some advance money or somebody has to be there. She has to be completely away from the job. So the major tranche is released at that time. So she has this support. And once she has the institutional delivery done or home-based delivery done, and once her check gets released, she could, without interest, she could repay this amount to the community group so that it could be rotated. It may seemingly a very small initiative, but it is so innovative.
Very innovative, as Renji said. The community group took the government scheme and turned it into something through the revolving fund that gave help to pregnant women when they actually needed it. And he gives another example. Support is available for educating the children, but only if they get to the schools in the first place, and that was the problem.
If a parent is engaging day and night physical labor somewhere else and earning a very little amount for these children, we can't expect that children to go to regularly to school, attend the school, because children are not the people who can actually think about means I should learn, I should go to the school, I should get educated. Dalit children, these many schemes, everything have been given to them and everything is free for them and we are expecting them at a school, but they don't turn up. They don't go to the school. But we never think why the child doesn't turn up to the school. The child does not have a parent at home to send them to the school. We have to get deep into why after all these things, this community, the children can't go to the school. Why don't they go? So a particular kind of help from the community, whoever was a little bit educated and could take a parentage of the community as such. So they put one person in charge so that every child in the family, in the community is looked after, monitored that the child goes to the school. And they ensured that because the schools had the money for uniform, schools had the money for books, schools had the money for food, all these things. So whatever scholarships the schools had, the same scholarship, when at a time the child needs it, this community gave it, this community group gave. And when the child was entitled and getting the scholarship, the community got it back. So these two systems, schooling, primary schooling, of course, and the Janani Suraksha, the pregnant women's security. So these two things have been very well taken care of by the groups that have been functioning in Nalanda under this particular area.
What I'm struck by in Renji's story so far is how it illustrates the power of supposedly powerless communities to analyse their situations, work out what's wrong with institutional responses, and solve problems themselves in ways that fit with the community's needs, in this case, in maternal health and in education. There are resources there, hidden but revealed, and this is the first building block of community philanthropy. Inspired by what they'd done, the community group started looking around for ways to expand their activities.
So we started looking for, the expansion. Of course, the community could manage certain things, but for expanding, some capacity development had to take place. So these things actually needed some kind of resources to come from outside. And somebody had to take care of those things. Since I had some relationship with the DFID, I had some communication with the DFID later. But unfortunately, DFID could not help the NGO groups at that time or community groups because they had to work with their policy was for working with the governments directly. Again, we went around many donors and so on. We wrote to many donors to expand and this kind of capacity development, this kind of consultations and this kind of certain system to be created and some exposure to be made, some meetings for making a kind of an internal binding among these people. So some cultural activities and so on. These are the things that is needed to make the system work. So, but it was difficult for people to understand because it did not look like a project.
In looking for external donor support, Ranji experienced some of the classic pushbacks. Their work didn't fit with the institutional policy, and it didn't look like a project. He was forced to look back inside their own community for resources.
There are many Dalit community members who are good business people, who are professionals, maybe doctors, engineers, and there are many Dalit who are working as good administrative positions in the governments and so on. So there were some good economically well-off people among the Dalit. So we tried to approach those people also. Can we make a kind of arrangement whereby we could expand this kind of process? We could give you exposure there, and you understand first if this strength could work, and slowly you also take a kind of initiative. You take an ownership in expanding this. You will have to spend your resources for that. You'll have to put your monetary resources for that. So it was a little difficult for, because there was, as I told you already, a part of trust among the communities and trust among the families. Due to the social situation and culturally, it's a long time they have been living in. Actually, the people did not have trust in each other. In 2 years of time, we were able to get the consent from around 60 people. 60 people was a good number. So, but two, three things had to happen. One is, they were all individuals. Somebody maybe 100 kilometers away from each other. Some are 1,000 kilometers away from each other. In order to make them sit together and make an arrangement where they could take the ownership and monitor. So an institutional form had to come in where they could be part of that form. Then again, we came into the same situation. To bring about that institution, we needed to bring these people together, give them space to get to know each other and make some governance systems and so on. All these needed resources. So again, we had to run around. So things went into the same kind of difficulty.
Ranji had identified a second building block of community philanthropy, support from the wealthier members of the community. But he came back round the circle to find they needed resources in order to build the structure and to create the meeting space to bring these people together in this broken community. And that took him back to where he started, looking for resources.
So then a Delhi-based group, when they came across GFCF, Global Fund for Community Foundation, they had a Nepal meeting. So maybe these people can understand what you are saying. This is a group which is community foundation group. Unfortunately, I'm good in communicating in English, maybe not. So I go to Nepal and talk to them. During those times, I met with a very, very huge accident. And I had my left leg completely, means 3-4 fractures were there. So I couldn't move anywhere. So I was not able to go to Nepal. So, but we did not lose the hope. What we did was, two of our members, they did not do much in English, but they could talk broken. And so they went there and they had a discussion with them. But maybe completely the communication was not successful. But one thing we won was that GFCF, especially Jenny, she understood that something these people are doing, which is interesting.
Ranji had sensed a light at the end of the tunnel in his search for resources to help to unlock the resources within his own community. He'd come across GFCF, who seemed to have a particular focus on supporting the kind of thing they wanted to do. But then there was a further barrier. An unfortunate and serious accident barred him from travelling to Nepal to the workshop. He had to send colleagues who struggled to share their ideas in English, and the barrier of language stopped them being able to explain their needs and their goals. We've reached a bit of a cliffhanger, really. What's going to happen next? If you want to find out, listen to the next episode.